IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 69 of the Killing It
Podcast.
I'm Carl, and I'm joined today by Dave and Ryan, as usual. And Ryan is, we were just saying off air, in his zone. The zone he's created, this cocoon of pandemia.
His office is now his stage. It's so good.
It is. Everybody who's ever seen me at an actual event knows that there's no such thing as a lectern that can keep me in place. I pace here and there. I break all the rules of presenters. I move. I talk with my hands. And now I can do that here. And it feels very natural. I've fully 100% evolved to adapt to the fact that this is where we're going to be delivering content for a while. Let's do it for fun.
Exactly. So meanwhile, Dave and I are in our same old offices.
Seated positions.
Well, I'm getting comfortable with the whole disc jockey microphone version of it, where it's like, I'm sitting here and I'm writing and I've got my stuff in front of me, and like, you know, but I'm obviously hands-free with my rig because I've got the microphone in front of me,
right.
but I'm getting comfortable with that version of it.
Back to like, your roots as a DJ.
We talk with our hands. There will be a day when you'll be able to buy the 3D version where, you know, we'll put our gloves on and then you'll see, watch our gloves fly all over the place. So
there will come a day in the future where Dave will start taking music requests for the podcast and
totally.
Need some theme music.
Ixnay, because he will start that next time if we live.
You could ask any of the people who were on my events team how ridiculous I was on picking music and songs for like every little bit.
I have to. And Ryan, you may have had the same experience in Manchester when you and I spoke on the same stage. It was the first time I was ever asked what song I wanted played when I came out on stage. I'm like, I don't know how to answer this question.
No, see, that's Dave did ask that question. I love the idea of picking your walk-up music. I have three of them right now that I cycle through depending on what I'm trying to accomplish, and I think they tell a very good story. One time, a certain industry stage that I was on, they didn't let me choose, but they selected music that they thought was thematic for each of us. And when I walked up, the song they played was Highway to the Danger Zone. And I was like, excuse me? Excuse me? I thought we were friends.
Now we're revisiting because there was a period of time where I had freedom over that song. And then it was changed. There's a very clear milestone in my career. Well, the moment I had control over it versus the moment I didn't.
All right. So why don't we do an episode? What the hell?
We should.
Quick reminder to folks, if you like us, if you love us, give us a thumbs up, share it with your friends, tell everybody to check out the Killing It Podcast.
We really do appreciate it. The sharing matters. There's nothing more powerful than someone recommending content. If you like what we're doing, really does help us an awful lot to help continue to grow the audience and engage the reach and what we're doing professionally with it. So we really do appreciate those shares.
And as nobody who knows us is surprised, we are data animals. So we do look into these things and we are pleasantly impressed with the way that the community continues to expand and the conversation, the two-way part of this. So please keep inviting friends in and invite them to send us their thoughts. That's excellent.
All righty, Mr. Dave.
Well, let's dive in on the first one because it's been a newsy kind of time. So we're recording this on the Thursday. It'll come out on Tuesday. But within the past 24 hours, we've had two major stories. And I think we want to talk about the larger themes at play. The first story is a very direct one from the Washington Post talking about the fact that the EU has now determined that that the EU privacy laws are not being correctly managed in the United States via the Privacy Shield Agreement, that it's just not good enough. And that in order to have the protection that EU citizens have in law, that the U.S. is going to have to do a better job of that. And the second story that is linked to this, of course, is yesterday. I will use my new nomenclature on this. Twitter was attacked by criminal element who used social engineering expertise to convince employees to give them access in order to execute a business money con scam with Bitcoin. And so we've had within the past 24 hours, we've had two major issues wrestling with society's view of data protection, data privacy, and the standards that we're going to do with technology. And I thought it was worthwhile having this conversation because at some level, you may say, well, maybe they're not linked. But I would say, wait a second, I think they're massively linked.
I think the fact that the decision in Europe was in process when the Twitter thing happened, you got to think that the Court of Justice was just like, I said. Like, this is what I'm talking about, people. Clearly, as we've been saying for a while now on this program, I don't believe at all that we are sufficiently protecting data. I don't believe at all that the self-regulation is going nearly far enough into the conversation, and therefore there does need to be a shift. Now, short term, I expect this will have, it has to have a material impact on U.S. regulations, because until it changes on the regulatory side, there are 5,000 odd companies that cannot conduct business over the ocean because they just fundamentally are prevented from sending data, not just Facebook, but they were kind of the original genesis of the complaint that led to this whole thing with Privacy Shield. That has to make a regulatory change. So I look at that and go, okay, cool. It's going to make it a little bit better. From a solution provider's point of view, if you are in the business of data protection and customer client commerce capabilities, if your purpose is to facilitate business with technology, this just got very, very real, and you'd better start to get familiar with these regulations. My big takeaway on it was, we've been saying for a year now that our regulations are nowhere near sufficient to protect information. And it just got said out loud in legally binding terms.
Well, it also points out that, you know, part of what the EU is able to do is to say, here's a shield we can put over everybody. But it's really complicated. I mean, you guys, I know both of you have filled out the GDPR paperwork. It's 3/4 of an inch thick. Nobody reads it. Nobody understands it. There isn't a nice checklist of how you stay relevant, and the fines are ridiculous. So, you know, everybody is just literally, I think most people's response is, I'm going to ignore it because I can't figure out how I personally am supposed to implement it. And when you look at the bigger picture, you say, okay, so let's say the US comes up with something similar. Certain states have come up with things. Canada's come up with something. Australia's come up with something. Like, your head's going to explode because you have this Tower of Babel of different regulations that don't align perfectly.
That is an excellent way to describe it, because it is, every one of them is just a little bit different. And I mean, we have all been around the regulatory compliance conversation for a couple of decades. And through the proof of what happens in the real world, we have arrived at a point of whatever about most regulations. HIPAA, oh my God, it's going to change the world. Because it didn't have any enforcement mechanism. And until somebody paid a massive fine or went to jail, nobody was going to bother with the complexity of compliance. This is one of those times where you got to go, do you remember where you were when you first tried to remember a 4-letter acronym instead of a 3? And GDPR came up and we all went, whatever. Yeah. This one's not in that category. That one has teeth.
Yeah. But look, I'm gonna use my same analogy because I think it's really important. I like clean water. I really do. Ryan is taking a sip of water exactly right now on cue. I like clean water.
I like clean water.
You know what? Chemical companies would make a whole lot more money if they just dumped their waste into our rivers. But I like clean water. You know what I also like? Some level of basic protection for my data not being mined and it, me sold off to the lowest bidder or being targeted by criminals. Like, I kind of would like those things. And you know what? Seems to me like the market hasn't fixed this problem for the same reason that on its own, chemical companies are going to try and find the cheapest way to solve the problem and dump their waste. Looks like tech companies are dumping their waste too. I think we're hitting that reckoning. And you know what? I mean, and I've talked about it. I talked about it on the weekend in my editorial, the fact that I think that we're not talking enough about the, I don't know, armed gangs that are attacking businesses.
But what do you do about the fact that what you want is an intergalactic universal rule of law, and it has to be implemented across over, you know, a few hundred countries who are all autonomous. That's why I started by saying, you know, the EU is kind of like, at least they can speak for, you know, a dozen countries.
I think my water analogy though stands up, right? So if you think about the principle of clean water, it can be measured slightly differently in different countries, right? And but there is still a basic understanding that we have some thought of what clean water means. We can come to a basic understanding of what data privacy means. And, you know, it is somewhat market driven, right? Clean water is defined by what the market balance will be. I think the analogy really works if you're thinking about it from that perspective. Like, you can come to a basic standard and it can be enforced in different countries. Hey, we sometimes enforce it at a different state level in terms of what clean water and how it's all run. If you think this through, it's very possible. I trust when I go to Amsterdam that despite the fact that the water system is regulated differently, that it's still okay, that the water's clean. I think we can use the same way of thinking about regulation. And if I were to build a massive intergalactic, interworld water company, then yeah, I have some additional complexities. But at a local level, you're still going to be able to manage it.
See, but this is where it gets to be very interesting. I agree with the market-driven thing. We're finally at the point where enough non-IT professionals take this seriously enough because they recognize it's about to affect them personally and they're pissed and therefore they're going to demand that something happens about this regulation. We've been crying wolf as an industry for a long time, like, no, please, seriously, believe me, take me seriously. Now they are taking us seriously and something had better change.
We're essentially out of time here, but Dave, I'm not arguing we shouldn't have regulation or that we should have less regulation. But I think we have to figure out how we're going to have somewhat more uniform regulation, because if you have something, you know, where you literally say, oh, we have one set of standards here and another set of standards here. How did we get the International Space Station to work? Well, we had to figure out how my thingy plugs into that thingy and the two of them.
Industry standards are a good idea.
Maybe we need something that is like the World Privacy Association or some large governing body, whether it's out of the United Nations or something else. I don't know, but this whole thing of one organization saying, these are our big rules, and no matter how complicated they are, everyone in the world has to do this? I don't think that
works. All right, so I'll close this out by going, look, this is why it fits in to our larger conversation about regulation and professionalization. Wouldn't it be great if there were some associations that were working together to bring industry expertise to bear on this? Like, it's all tied together to the maturing of our industry.
And not for nothing, by the way, we have had a conversation called SplinterNet in the past, and that will be the future if we don't figure this out. That's not what anybody wants.
Well, but Carl, so because we're trying to be strict on time, why don't you tell them a little bit, because it is related at some level, but you had this exploration of the Ethical Explorer Pack for developers.
So this is an interesting topic that it started with something called the Ethical OS, which like is basically saying, look, programmers aren't intending to do quote unquote the wrong thing when they write programs and they, you know, for example, don't have inclusive policies, their images may be misrepresentative of certain cultures or whatever. There's all kinds of stuff that you know, it's difficult for them to know because they're sitting in a cubicle saying, wow, watch this. Isn't this cool? Right. And so this is just an attempt to begin having a discussion about there really is a good way for people to think about how they develop things, not just games, but all of the software we use, all of the things we use. You know, we're having this national discussion across the United States about the role of race in many other things and, you know, the kind of the clash of cultures within our own culture. And we have to acknowledge some of the quote unquote institutional piece of that is literally built into how programs interact with one another. And, you know, we talk about big data. Well, big data has as many biases as all of the programs that got together to collect this data, put it in one place, and all of the programs that analyze it. It's a really, really big question. And that, you know, how do you start with an ethical operating system or an ethical programming system? And so this, we're gonna link to the article, but this is something that's been going on for a couple of years, and I think it's going to become more prominent in the years ahead.
Yep. See, and I will go to this level, right? Without trying to discern what portion of all of those unethical implications in technology were on purpose versus accidental, right? Let me be an optimist for a moment. Let's assume that the vast majority of those are just blind spots, that it was just an unintentional, oh, I didn't even think about that. Now that I am thinking, let's find a way to change it and do it a little bit better. This article, and with an attempt to be super arty, they make a very effective point. Even if it's not a perfect solution, anything that gets you to stop and think while you're creating, oh, wait a minute, you're right. I didn't think about bias in AI and algorithms. I didn't stop and think about the over distribution of data. I didn't stop and think about market consolidation and what would happen in a negative way. Now that I am thinking, maybe I will choose to do it differently. Maybe I won't, but it will eliminate a lot of unintended consequences that come from these blind spots. I actually think my takeaway from this article was Number one, if you want change in technology, it's not going to come from the CEO of a technology company. We know who those humans are. I don't trust them to throw, I don't trust them with ethics as far as I can throw them. I believe it will come from the people, employees and marketplaces. And the second thing was, this is really exciting because it might legitimately have the seeds of progress that you can see when employees stand up and go, no, we don't want to do it that way anymore, then their companies might actually change, i.e. see Google instead of Facebook, right?
Like, well, you're so spot on because, and I talk a lot about this, right, from the societal guardrails, that if a project like this or a definition like this is society setting certain guidelines, and it can be market driven. I'm not necessarily saying, I mean, society includes the market, right? It is one of the constituents within that space. So the market can put forth an idea and say, here's a really great idea, and the market competes. It just includes larger interests than just the idea of a purely profit-driven bit. I love this idea. I love this way of saying, like, we're going to have some thought given to the structure and ideas to make sure that those tools are available for the people that are doing the construction. So then, you know, a smart, savvy business person who's adjusting the machine to optimize for money production, which is their goal, can play within the rules and figure out the ways to optimize for money production. And it's not a bad thing.
I also think it's just good to have this discussion because I like the idea of going into this saying, we're going to talk about ethics as a legitimate piece of the evolution of the web of technology in general, but without saying, and the conclusion must be as follows. Because, you know, for example, one of the things that we have to look at is, what's the ethical use of technology with regard to warfare, right? All elements of war, whether that is attacking Twitter, right? Or attacking another country with a bomb, all weapons of warfare are created by human beings. And so the question is, well, should you, and we've talked about this before, should the workers be allowed to say, hey, we're not going to work on that package. We're not going to work on that technology. And whether or not the workers should have that authority, I think that we should allow them to have that conversation.
And by the way, this, we have a precedent for this. Like we've all agreed, by the way, that chemical weapons, for example, is something as a world that we don't want to do. We have treatments of prisoners. We've decided that, you know, nuclear weapons are not, like, it's a very reasonable model for thinking about it to say, we're just going to agree that there are certain things we want to all see.
Well, and again, this is not a magic bullet to solve this ethical problem. It does raise the awareness of the potential for ethical implications inside the development process. That is like preemptive instead of reactive. We spend so much time trying to undo the ethical problems or trying to make up for the mistakes or correct the injuries that happen. It would be so much more valuable to just prevent them from happening to begin with. An ounce of prevention, a pound of cure, all of that stuff, right? This is, I think, it's not just a highfalutin philosophical idea. It has very practical implications. Even just their definition of the 8 categories that you need to evaluate when you are considering technology ethics, that already is significantly advancing the conversation. Please read the article and please download that Ethical Explorer pack, because boy, I think that stuff is cool.
And by the way, I think this is super practical for even if you're listening to this and you own a typical IT solution provider, MSP, technology services company, whatever, even if you're doing, you know, $1 million, $2 million, $4 million in revenue, I still think this is all incredibly relevant, because mm-hmm. I think you can put these kinds of ideas into the way you execute in your business. And I think it's a competitive advantage. I think, you know, I mean, I work with somebody who I even sort of laughs at, because one of his mottos in the business is, we give a damn, right? And it sums it up really nicely, but it actually, this is a way of systematically making sure that that is part of the way you have a culture.
See, Dave, you mentioned it a few months ago, actually. When we were talking about the Internet Bill of Rights, right, and the idea of converting that into a scorecard associated with you, little company locally, and all of your technology clients, can you actually give a tangible scorecard of the degree to which they are using technology ethically? That's branding, and that's competitive advantage.
I agree completely. And we will revisit this, because it fits nicely into the contract with the web and some other stuff that we've talked about. And we all kind of like, you know, the ethical discussion as a rule. So topic number 3, I want to talk about, you know, in our continuing discussion of life after the COVID, after the pandemic. I love this quote from William Gibson. You probably all heard it. The future is already here. It's just not widely distributed. You know, and I think about, as people are having these discussions about what's going to be, you know, the new normal or whatever, a lot of people are saying things are never going to go back to the way they were. Well, at some point that's true, because they never can. But on the other hand, a lot of stuff that people think is new isn't new at all. And I think it's worth looking at whether or not the stuff that people are talking about as new, was it really new, or was it just actually some stuff like Zoom was pretty darn mature and just waiting for people to recognize that it's there. And, you know, what's new to you as an IT professional is not the same as what's new to your clients who never heard of this and can't imagine that you could actually teach a class online, where we've been doing it for 20 years. So anyway, I just think it's kind of interesting to look at it from the perspective of how new is new when we look at this technology, because almost none of it is actually new.
Yeah, very much so. And this fits within there in a number of different contexts. I've had a conversation around what I call the three horizons of innovation. I learned that concept from Clay Christensen, who wrote The Innovator's Solution. It's a very well thought out idea of innovation is not just a far in the future concept, right? There is innovation that happens on things that are available today tomorrow and into the future, right? We can innovate for today by making the products we currently know about better, new feature functions, advanced releases, right? We can improve things that are, we've heard about them, they're there, we know, they're just not yet ready for prime time, and they're about to have a hockey stick of adoption, exactly like video conferencing right now. And then there's innovation into the future, which is where most big R&D focus goes. And these are the real George Jetson opportunities that are awesome and nowhere near commercializable for a few years. Innovation happens on all three of those all the time as a solution provider in your professional offerings, right? Your portfolio of solutions. If you are not constantly paying attention to all three of those horizons of innovation, you will rapidly become a dinosaur when the thing you think is cool today gets usurped by something that others in the market have been paying attention to for years. They're already experts at it the very first time you heard of it. That is the death knell for a technology business. This one relates to another of my favorite quotes. We credit T.C. Doyle for this one, right? The innovation comes on very slowly until it happens all at once. And this is where we will see. Zoom just did it, and there were some growing pains. There are others that are about to happen. Do you have your, you know, future sights tuned in on things that are coming down the pipe?
You know, it's interesting because you really do have to think about it on those sort of different horizon perspective. Is you know, it can be very advanced in one space, but not in the public space, or advanced in one area. And I think it's a really important thing to also recognize that not all markets are at the same place, not all industries are at the same place. And by the way, you can be super disruptive in one industry by leveraging something that is old hat in another. You know, and so it's that really crystallizes the way that you do need to think about these different pieces. You know, we talk about the next normal. I like that better than new. Because it's just an adjustment. You know, we happen to have had a 4 month now period of reshuffling of things. That doesn't mean there's not another one coming. And by the way, the reshuffling just means you're able to move things around now in ways that you weren't before. You know, we were laughing at Ryan is now a presenter online than he wasn't. That is the reshuffling and reassembling of the various components here. I think those that are doing that well right now are the ones that are going to be very effective over the next normal and the next normal and beyond.
So I will say one of the interesting things for me that's actually stood out in this young recession that we're in. I actually remember in the last recession, in the year leading up to the crash, that there was this evolution of cloud services. And I remember going to conferences and literally talking to people who said, I will not learn another level of technology. I will not do another round of, you know, upgrading my brain. And then the recession hit and those people literally disappeared. They either retired, sold their business, got a job or something. And this time around, I'm not hearing that because we're kind of on the other side. At this point, we're all in the cloud or, you know, we've got at least one foot there. And all of these technologies, the people who were building businesses on IT looked around and said, all we're doing now is reapplying knowledge we already have. Unless you're an AI developer, you're probably not really doing anything new. You're just introducing your clients to a world that they didn't know existed. And so I think more people will survive this because they're actually getting to implement stuff that they know very, very well. Their clients just have never heard of it.
I take very encouraging outputs from that, right? The market is paying attention to the fact that nothing is permanent. No technology lasts forever. You have to have that future bias in your portfolio. My tactical takeaway from this is if you go to those three horizons, what I am seeing is very few brand new inventions, but a significant acceleration of horizon number two. right? It is things that we've heard about, things that we're not quite ready for prime time. And what we're what is happening is just a really rapid acceleration of, yep, we're going to adopt that all over the place right now. If you are not good at updating your portfolio, you are about to be left behind, right? That is just an essential skill. That's why we keep saying the word agile, and Dave and I have a white paper. If you'd like to read it, we can bring that thing out, right? The other point that I take away, our friends over at Gartner said, okay, now that we're in this thing and we see the recession and we can tell what's going on, update the numbers forecast for IT spending. Most recent data they have is overall category 8% decline in IT spending in North America in 2020. But increase in the cloud category by 19%. If you need more evidence than that to don't stick to your knitting, please always be evolving, then if you need more evidence than 8 down, 19 up, I can't help you out.
Right. And I'll throw some other additional numbers into this. I was on a webinar earlier this week with Jay McBain from Forrester, and he threw out that the current thinking around the revenue decline for a typical solution provider is around 17%. So I'll give another like sense of like, you know, like this is your time to reassemble. If I quip, Ryan and I have always talked about this idea of kind of recycling 20% of your business. Well, I believe 17 is very close to 20. So I believe 20% of your business is going to recycle on its own right now. Maybe you want to be prepared, like be thinking about how you're going to be doing that.
See, and if you want a tactical calculation for this, the one that I always ask my clients is take a look at your top line revenue and ask yourself how much of that is presently coming from something you did not sell prior to 2 years ago. If that number is not 20%, you are behind.
Well, that gives a tactic to end today on.
Yes, exactly. We are out of time, but man, it zips by. That's what 45 minutes of preparation gets you.
We keep quipping. There's another hidden show out there.
All righty. Thanks for tuning in. Tell all your friends, and that will do it for episode 69 of the Killing It Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It Podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.